Welcome to this week's edition of The Green on Delaware Public Media. I'm your host, Tom Byrne. As part of our 2024 election coverage, Delaware Public Media is offering a series of candidate conversations. We reached out to all candidates filed to run in the races for U.S. House and U.S. Senate, as well as governor, lieutenant governor, and insurance commissioner, and invited them to sit down with us. Candidates in each race are being asked about the same set of topics to allow you to get to know them and compare them. The interviews you'll hear here on The Green are edited for time. Full conversations are online at DelawarePublic.org. The race for governor features six candidates seeking to replace term-limited Democrat John Carney. Today, we focus on the three facing off in the GOP primary next month. We start with State Representative Mike Ramone. The House Minority Leader has served in the General Assembly since 2008 and is now making his first run for statewide office. Most governors have some signature initiative or legislation that they pursue. Ruth Ann Minner, the indoor smoking ban. Jack Markell, language immersion, career pathways. John Carney, the Wilmington Learning Collaborative, budget smoothing. What do you see as maybe being your signature items, things that you would walk into the office saying, like, if I only get one or two things accomplished, this is the one or two things I want to get done?
Delaware first. And basically that means we've got to lower taxes. The taxes that the seniors are paying to be able to move and then move to a senior home with the extra 1% on the transfer tax, the complexity of our seven brackets of personal income tax, the gross receipts temporary tax that's now about 30 years old that's hitting businesses even when they're closed down during COVID. They lose 2 months of income and have to go through chaos to get through the COVID. That's no one's fault. But then the state goes and still gets their gross receipts tax. You know, it just so many things have put us in a very precarious position, especially businesses. I think we were the only state in the nation that's GDP went negative. Only one. And we were obviously last. And that's not sustainable, especially when we keep increasing our budget by 10% a year. You know, this enormous quantity over the last, three, 4 years has been over $4 billion of what we're calling extraordinary income. But we're not using extraordinary income to set off to offset extraordinary expenses like our, you know, our state employees underfunded retirement compensation fund. So they're the kind of things that I just want to bring to the table. I think it was Pete DuPont who went on when he went to run for governor. He said Delaware's bankrupt. I'm not going to say Delaware's bankrupt, but I am going to say is we are in an unsustainable trajectory of 9 and 10% increases on a budget, and there's no more COVID money coming in that we can keep doing this stuff. I think COVID got us here. I think there needs to be a strong, fiscally responsible governor who's willing to get us back, and I'm doing that with no political aspirations. I've 63 years old. If I get to be the governor of this state, I will do the best I can every day I'm there. And as long as people want me there, I will be there. And when they're done with me, I'll get out of the way. But I'm not going to go and do things for political to get more votes of people like me. I'm just going to do what we have to do to make the state solvent.
You've talked a little bit here about the budget, so I want to delve into that a little bit more. One thing I think is pretty clear, if you look at what history tells us, is that the next governor, whoever that person is, will face at least one economic downturn during their time in office. We saw that the last three-plus governors. So I'm curious, if you're in that position where there's $300, $400, $500 million shortfall, what would your approach be to balancing the budget?
Fortunately, Tom, I was on the budget smoothing task force. Mm-hmm. And we had spent months developing something with then Treasurer Simpler and I believe it was Governor Markell at the time. Mm-hmm. And we just came up with a great solution to a balanced budget with no political thinking in it. Unfortunately, one of the senators kind of ended up making sure it did not come out of the Senate. And the byproduct of that was, quite frankly, Governor Carney, much to his credit, had to digest it as a executive order from the governor's office, in which he then didn't digest the whole thing. He only digested some of it. So, you know, how to digest the extraordinary income? Do we give back tax refunds? I've been in office 16 years. The only tax reductions were those that we had previously taken away. So I was there in 08 when Governor Markell won. Mm-hmm. I went through that deficit. I was with State Rep Melanie George Smith when she was the chair of the finance, going through the next big deficit. We went through a line item of every single item, which gave us the trajectory we're on today. I would begin with that. I think it's very simplistic to me. Find the problems, define the solutions, bring the right people to the table to make sure the solutions have no unintended consequences, and have the guts to then digest them.
So we got a couple of places to go that you've talked about. One will be education in just a moment, but previously you mentioned healthcare, so I want to go there next.
Mm-hmm.
Healthcare costs and access becoming kind of stubborn issues in this state.
Mm-hmm.
Delaware has one of the highest costs of care in the nation, but still struggles to attract and retain providers and specialists. As you noted, it's playing out in the cost of coverage for state employees and retirees. It's also the issue of dealing with an aging population and their needs in the healthcare arena. Lawmakers like yourself did do some work on state retiree benefits this year, also created the Hospital Cost Review Board. Curious where you feel the state should be prioritizing addressing healthcare cost and access.
My first statement would be what I would not do. I'm not going to go to any business, nonprofit or profit, and tell them if they're, you know, what they should be charging and how they should be doing business. That's capitalism. You
so
leave
you're
it
against
alone.
That board?
Oh, no, I'm against the entire thought of that because, okay, well, if we're going to do that, why aren't we doing that to our own state? What happens when we do that to the nonprofits like Easter Seals, Boys Clubs? Why? You know, this. Where does this stop? It's hospitals that we've done this to. So I think that is just horrible. I fought very hard against it. We were fortunate once again to be able to get some compromises. Not what we wanted, but it was better than where it started. I've also tell you that I'm not going to go raid our retirees and our state benefits packages when we promised those when these people were hired. People will bring up with some commercial companies do that. The state of Delaware has it in their contract for these people. You cannot welch on that. So you don't go to those places to solve the problem. What you do is you define the problem and then you find resolution that is global.
How can you work on the access side? How can you draw more providers, specialists, people who specialize perhaps in, as I mentioned, an aging population and their needs?
Mm-hmm. I think the simplest way is through capitalism. You know, you set up environments and you allow there to be more competition, not less. You create environments where you have the technology and the information coming in here. Well, I'm one of the biggest proponents of why are we doing a sister hospital school? Why don't we create a medical school in the state of Delaware through one of the best universities that we're sitting at is Delaware State University or University of Delaware. Either of those could digest, even if they partnership and digest different segments of the medical field. If you start educating people in your own state in the areas that the state has the highest needs, whether it's doctors, whatever in the health field, guess what? You're going to have a higher number of people coming in to go to those medical schools and then maybe stay in the state. And a lot of the people who actually then stay are Delaware residents their whole life, like I was, might go to that school in the state and then be able to stay in the state and work there. Now they go to other states for the school. Often they never come back to Delaware. That's easy to change. Just focus on solutions, not Band-Aids on problems.
You mentioned education earlier, so Let's go to that. Specifically, education funding, which has been a very significant issue recently. The lawsuit over education funding equity led to a report that was released last fall that recommended the state spend an additional $600 million to $1.1 billion per year on education. You and your fellow lawmakers did create a public education funding commission to look at that issue in the coming months. But I'm interested where you stand on education funding, starting with the current level of spending. Right, wrong, more or less, stay the same?
We're one of the highest in the nation. There's what, are we third, fourth in spending? And we're like, what, third or fourth from the bottom in results. Spending doesn't actually affect results. Results are affected by very smart, concise environments that are set up to guarantee success. We set up environments that more guarantee failure. We see it with our children. We have schools currently in some of our cities that the performance levels is 3-4% of the children are at reading levels and so forth. You know, the inner city youth, the socioeconomic challenged families, often single family or single parent families, where they can't put their child in a choice school or go somewhere else, they're forced to use a school that's failing. Do we have some great schools? Yes, we do. So what do? We actually have waiting lists for them because they're not big enough. My vision in business, if it works, make it gently, very planned growth patterns that you can then keep taking more and more and more, right? And if it doesn't work, close it. The biggest problem in education today is the way we do funding. We are the most complicated funding mechanism in the nation. And even when I had meetings with all those people in the financial services, in the financial divisions of every single school district up in Newcastle, the people who run the finances could not explain to me how the funding came in.
So I wanted to get that because that's one of the things that's been talked about a lot is changing the unit count system or modifying the unit count system. How do you see – does it have to completely go? A lot of other states use weighted funding to make sure the money gets to where it's supposed to go. What do you support?
I would tie funding with autonomy, and I would do it at the school level. I would give a principal the ability to have the funding and this and the support to be able to run his school in a successful way.
A couple more issues I want to hit on. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about affordable housing. That has become an increasingly important issue throughout the state. It's complex, obviously. So what I'm asking you is, where do you think the state can be most effective in addressing it? Where should the state focus its efforts to have maybe the most impact quickly?
Most impact quickly is get out of the way. You shouldn't be taking 2 years for me to be able to open a business on a new property. You shouldn't be in an environment where your states and your cities and your municipalities don't know what everybody's doing, and people got to go to 3 or 4 different places to fill out the applications to be able to know where they're supposed to be, how they can do it. That needs to be focused on the fastest way that we can get out of the way of businesses being able to come to Delaware, grow, and be responsible in that growth to help Delaware facilitate more jobs, more people, more housing. And quite honestly, if we let them do the housing much quicker, I mean, we're starting to put these new sprinkler regulations and this. We have so many regulations on a poor home builder. And what are they going to do? They're not going to absorb it. They're going to pass it on. So the more we regulate and the more houses go up, and then everybody who just did all those regulations and passed all those bills go and say, but we don't have any affordable housing. No kidding. You have density restrictions. You don't have any smart growth going on in our state anymore. We don't have anything that digests a plan of growth to handle the areas that need handling. And I would start it with some sort of a small village concept that they do in many other states, little tiny starter houses, little tiny lots, dense, but effective, good workforce, good area, and they can get to an area that they could never get to unless we do something like this.
Let's talk a little bit about climate. The state has recently taken some steps to address climate change. Climate Change Solutions Act calling for the state to make zero net additions of greenhouse gases to the atmosphere by 2050. Delaware Advanced Clean Cars 2 program, what many call an EV mandate, calling for 82% of new cars, trucks sent to Delaware for sale to be zero emission by 2032. And the state has made some initial steps toward procuring offshore wind energy. We'll start with the basic question, which is, do you support any of those efforts?
No. And I would suggest it this way. Once again, energy, green energy, needs to be a series of efforts, not one effort. Let me give you the perfect
example. Well, that is kind of a series of efforts, though.
Well, let me make it a little different then.
Okay.
So rather than saying your car has to be 100% electric, I have 3 Toyota hybrids. I get 50 miles to the gallon. My other car used to get 20. Now, those hybrids don't plug in. It's gas generates, so I don't have to put charging stations all over the state. You say it's progressive growth. I would say it's actually non-green friendly, because after we put all these charging stations up and we spend the money to have them installed, have them made, put them in, have to keep them running, have to worry about something when it gets cold because we know they don't charge anymore, worry about having enough of them. By the time we get all that done, 5-10 years, guess what? We're going to have new technology in those cars. We're not going to need – those charging stations are going to be hangers for your clothes, just like your elliptical bicycles or treadmills, right? So we need to be smart. And smart means let's take a step. When I first got elected, within the first few years, Colin O'Mara, he's running as a governor also, was in the initiative with the state of Delaware, very much pushing for the California Clean Air Car Act 1. Mm-hmm. We digested that. And everybody says, oh, it brought us our EPA ratings below all the numbers and so forth. It helped. But General Motors and Chrysler and DuPont all closing as manufacturing meccas in our state probably helped a lot more. Then we say, oh, now we got to go to Clean Car Act 2. And why? Because the place up in Booth Wynn, Pennsylvania, is still not under the EPA ratings. But you know what they do in Pennsylvania, very close to Booth Wynn? They mine coal. So I would suggest it's that clean because the air from Delaware is blowing that way and it kind of mixes with theirs and makes it better. Point being simple, air moves. When I keep saying to you about using the advantage of our small state and our geographic location, air moves. That's got to be something that the federal government works on in a way that is proactive and creative and not reactive and trying to do mandates on whose car what can build or they can put in.
I do want to move on to something you talked about in terms of political atmosphere. But before I do that, I do want to just ask one real quick. Are there any climate-related initiatives you would favor to address potential issues Delaware could face as a low-lying state and sea level rise and things like that in the future?
Well, we just have an enormously successful bid process that we won for hydrogen. How can you get any cleaner than hydrogen? The hydrogen plant that's going to be here, hydrogen cars, hydrogen. There's so many things we can do with that. I am not against nuclear power. I mean, we've got one of the biggest nuclear plants right next to us, and we get no benefit from it. Talking about, you know, taking advantage of our geographic size our geographic location and size. I'm not sure we put something like they got in Jersey, but I know now they have all these mini nuclear environments that are almost, you know, this big thought, oh, nuclear energy is going to destroy the world. There is a way to do it now, and even the waste from it is usable, reusable. So, you know, we need to blend. We need to blend responsible energy for cars. We need to blend an initiative of hydrogen energy that would be sensitive. I believe it's us in Pennsylvania and maybe Jersey in a little link together. We need to look at the ability to keep the port or use a location where we can bring in clean energy. But I would strongly suggest we are one of the highest energy cost states in the nation, and especially on our East Coast. We need to address why we're so high. And Jersey is one of the lowest. And I'll say this, I'd rather us pumping oil and facilitating use of any kind of fuels because in our country, we do it responsibly and very clean. So what we're doing is we're doing it the cleanest way possible, and our air goes over to the area across the ocean, and then their toxic way of pumping anything they can because we're not energy independent anymore, that toxic stuff comes out and hits us in California, which is why they had their Clean Air Act initiative. So it's just a different way of solving problems.
You mentioned the toxic nature of politics these days, and there does seem to be a stronger distrust of government, and that has led to calls for more transparency and accountability. What role do you feel the governor's office and you personally can play in giving Delawareans greater transparency and accountability from government?
I believe there's nothing more important than your reputation and your ability to be kind and understanding of those that you most disagree with. When we stop listening and we start yelling so loud that no one else can hear, we often are just like a car spinning its wheels and the smoke coming up. Nobody's going anywhere. We need to stop yelling, stop talking as much, start listening more. And quite frankly, if we just stay focused on what our job is, an elected official's job is to serve others, not themselves. If elected, I think I will focus on that in a way that no one's ever done before. I'm not red. I'm not blue. I always say this, I'm Delaware yellow. And Delaware needs someone who can listen to the far right, the far left, the centrist right, the centrist left, even all the independents, and come up with solutions to their problems, regardless of what their problems are. Toxicity and bipolar, what I'll call entertainment news, is really problematic for the state. Our state's smaller. We've never done this. We all know each other. We're less than 1 million people, or maybe right at now. We can do better. And I look forward to being able to help do that. If it's, you know, 4 years or eight, whatever they want me for, I'll do my best.
More specifically to the idea of transparency and accountability, I think I heard you mention this, but I'm going to just confirm it. You would support an inspector general's office.
I do. I also support more openness in some of the campaign stuff that's going on. I'm not here to defend or scrutinize anyone. That's not my role. My role is to be a great governor and a great leader and work on policy, not politics. But what I will say is maybe certain things have been happening in all these areas where they're eating their own sort of in one party, whatever that's worth. But what I would like to see is better education, better guidelines, make sure everybody knows where the bumpers are so they don't go outside of those bumpers. I'm not suggesting in any of the environments being spoken about that that's not what happened. What I am suggesting is I don't think our bumpers are as clear as they should be. And the Inspector General's office would help us clarify that, give more openness. The two biggest things that concern me in this state right now is people's confidence and trust in government. They've lost both. They don't trust our government, and they don't have confidence that the government could do it right.
We've covered a lot of ground, but I do want to end by asking you if you think there's an issue that you feel is not getting the attention it deserves in this election cycle and how you would address it.
Well, simple for me. It's the balance. You know, you have 32 years we've had one-party rule in Delaware. 32 years since we had a Republican governor, which was Mike Castle, and before that, Pete DuPont. That's a long run. The irrelevancy of a party in any political process, in any level, county, state, U.S., is counterproductive regardless of which party has that power. If it's all Republicans, there's no discussion. There's no balance. If it's all Democrats, there's no discussion. There's no balance. Our country was built based on balance, and I look forward to bringing that here.
That's Republican candidate for Governor Mike Ramone. Our full conversation with him is available at DelawarePublic.org. Up next, our candidate conversations continue with another Republican in the governor's race, Jerry Price. This is The Green on Delaware Public Media.